everyone, and welcome. I'm Grace.
And I'm Zoe.
The Dead Language Ladies,
a classics podcast of hot takes on the ancient world.
Today, our topic is Odysseus versus Achilles in Homer. Who did it better?
So since today is the first episode, we thought that we should introduce ourselves a little bit.
I'm Grace DeAngelis. I'm starting my second year in a PhD program studying classics, specifically language and philology. My specialty, my area of focus is Latin literature. And I especially like to study ancient Roman texts and think about how the literary choices reflect like material and sociopolitical environments as well. So I like to be pretty interdisciplinary in that way.
Hi, I'm Zoe Bennett. I'm a former classic student, and I'm also the author of the historical fiction novel, The Son of God,
which is about Emperor Augustus and his rise to power as Octavius.
Fantastic book.
There's also a new fantasy novel that I'm writing that is ancient Mediterranean inspired. So you're the scholar. I'm the creative.
I think so.
And sometimes we cross over that line and we dabble.
I think you cross over more than I cross over.
Well, who has helped me on countless creative ancient Greek compositions for my novels?
True. I'm typically the one helping out with the accents more than the creative impetus behind it. But
so, yeah, that's a little bit about us. This is super casual. This is just two classic students wanting to really appreciate the ancient world that we've studied so much and written about and talked about and traveled to.
Yes. Traveled back in time in many ways. Yeah. I mean, we just love talking about it with each other. And so, you know, we figured that there's probably other people out there as well who are, you know, interested in the ancient world and in these kind of, you know, more fun, creative approaches to it. As you'll see, we have some really fun episodes planned for the future that we hope you guys will enjoy as well.
To get started, I mean, this is a perfect example of trying to bring a modern eye to the past. Odysseus versus Achilles and Homer, who did it better? What's the first? I mean, the criteria is loose, and by that, there is no criteria, just what the vibe is.
Yeah.
So first answer, we're going to say at the same time what our just instinct is. 1, 2, 3.
Odysseus.
Yeah. I sort of knew we were going to have the same answer to this, but I think our reasons are different.
What are your reasons? Why do you think Odysseus is better?
So the first thing that came to mind was that Odysseus felt to me like a character in a book that's written by a woman. Like, you know, that whole joke that's like, he's such a man. He's such a man written by a woman. Like, he's the love interest that's so clearly in the female gaze. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Odysseus really resonates like to me in that way. So he's familiar. He's like a romance love interest. But also not at all, because he's already married, but there's still some of that in him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of his journey is motivated by his wife and his family and his homeland, rather than like, you know, winning glory for himself. So,
but he's also like cunning. He's like a little bit tricky. He's a little darker. He's more brooding. He's brooding like, he's a wanderer. He's almost like, you know, he's on the ship. He's a sailor. Like, there's something about that that I love.
He feels like he would fit into a Hallmark movie in a way that Achilles just wouldn't.
Achilles is too, I'd almost like, well, Hallmark is pretty one-dimensional.
Yeah, but to bring it back to the idea of the female gaze that you mentioned earlier, he, I think, is very appealing to women because he is so explicitly motivated by his desire to return to Penelope.
Yeah, like no matter what he has to do, no matter who he has to kill or who he has to sleep with or what he has to do to get back to her, it's all about getting back to her. Achilles shows no such female preoccupation, really.
I mean, he is motivated by love in one sense, some would say.
Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
I mean, just to finish this off, there's the Greek. So for people who know the Greek, in the first line, Odysseus is described as polutropos, which is sort of one of those untranslatable words that every translator can try their hand at. There's of twists and turns. That's a very famous one. Sort of wily.
Yeah.
Complicated wily. Was the Emily Wilson translation, which is one of the first. I don't know. She's not the first female translator, I think. I'm pretty sure she's not. But she's sort of like a modern female translator. She's attempting to make it a modern translation. And so complicated, especially from talking about the female gaze. I was like, yeah, he's a complicated man.
Well, polytropos literally means many turns, and many turns in the sense that, you know, his journey to get home was literally an odyssey. Like he, you know, took many detours on his way back from Troy.
Right.
But also in the sense that he himself is deceitful. You know, he tells lies, he spins stories, he disguises himself. Yeah, polytropos, I find it a really interesting adjective because it both describes his journey and what he went through, but also the way that he himself is hard to pin down.
And the same word is used in, or I don't know if it's in the Hymn to Hermes, but it is describing Hermes. And usually it's translated devious when it's about Hermes, which makes sense. I would have to, you know, fact check myself, but it is interesting, that word. It can have a negative or a positive, just sort of how you look at it. And that's sort of the whole, you know, a bad boy that has a kind of good heart vibe that is so book character-ish of Odysseus.
Absolutely.
That's my pro Odysseus. And that's sort of why I chose him. Why did you choose Odysseus?
I chose Odysseus because I think just from a modern perspective, he is someone that people can relate to much more easily. His motivation is like his family, his home. And, you know, I think that's just very sympathetic. Like, you know, Achilles wants to
go to war,
win glory for himself. Yeah, he wants to destroy the city of Troy and, you know, kill all the men and enslave all the women and whatever. But Odysseus, like, you know, he didn't even really want to go to war in the first place. He was always the intelligent one. You know, even in the Iliad, he's, you know, the advisor rather than necessarily the one going out and killing a bunch of people. So I think that Odysseus is much more sympathetic. And, you know, that does, I think, change throughout the poem. You know, we can talk about Calypso and Circe, things like that. And when he gets back, killing all the suitors, killing all the female slaves that were in his household. So it's complicated, one could say.
For sure.
But... one has said, in fact. But I think in general, Odysseus is just more suitable and more appealing to modern audiences.
I will add, because I agree with you, I think that Odysseus is for, it does suit the modern sensibility. And I was thinking recently, actually, for some blog posts I was doing, I mentioned how the Iliad has the first word of the Iliad in Greek, you know, because Greek obviously has a flexible word order and everything. So the first word is sort of the emphasis on that. And it's the wrath of Achilles, it's that anger. Whereas in the Odyssey, the first word is andra, man. And so already you know that this poem is going to, this epic poem is going to be about an individual and that that man and this portrait of this man. And I think that's very, that's way more individualistic than the sort of wrath in the Iliad. And even the names, Odyssey is about Odysseus. It comes from that versus the Iliad is about Troy, the city. And it's about like the history and all that and the battle and everything. It's not really like trying to delve into Achilles' psychology as much as it is into Odysseus, even though I don't know if Homer was really whoever they or he or whoever it is who's responsible for these epic poems. And one day maybe we'll get into that. For now, we're going to brush over it. Were they really preoccupied with individual psychology? Probably not. It wasn't really what they were worried about at the time. But in modern literature, like who would really appeal to us? You would think would be Odysseus. Although I'm going to move the conversation towards Achilles a little bit more. The most modern, the most recent literature depiction is of Achilles in Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. That's interesting because you would think if Odysseus is so appealing, and there is Circe, her other book, who Odysseus does play a major role, but it's not really, it's more about Circe.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up Song of Achilles, because in that book, most of the plot line of the book takes place and centers around events before what happens in the Iliad, right? It focuses a lot on Achilles and Patroclus growing up together and training. And, you know, those were really important parts of kind of the mythology of Achilles, but they don't show up in the Iliad itself. So it is interesting that thinking about Achilles, this book, arguably one of the most well-known pieces of ancient Greek, ancient mythology-inspired literature today, it's interesting that it's not really a retelling of the Iliad as much as it is going through Achilles as like an individual character, which, like you said, is really kind of the narrative approach of the Odyssey rather than the Iliad.
And also another factor which Song of Achilles, I mean, manages it pretty well, is that Achilles is half divine. His mother is a goddess, right? Point is, half divine, demigod, if you will. Odysseus is only mortal. So he's really Andra. Like he's the man. Yeah. He's human. Achilles is not. And so I feel like usually the characters in the ancient world that were sort of half divine in some way lose a little bit of that individuality because they're like this sort of far off, untouchable figure because they're so connected to the gods who were really untouchable. But then in the Song of Achilles, you're sort of in his head. I feel like you're more in Patroclus' head and what he's thinking. I don't even really remember how much of Achilles we get in terms of his thoughts.
I think it's all from the POV of Patroclus, if I'm remembering it correctly.
So in a way, Madeline Miller stays true to that sort of idea of Achilles not being, it's not really about him in the end. It's about everyone else who's caught up in this war, in his wrath. Yeah. So does his divinity give him some extra points in our scale or does it almost hurt him? In a way, it puts me off a little bit. I think I prefer the Andra, the man, the mortal of Odysseus.
I do too. And I think obviously we're both coming at this from the angle of really enjoying modern literature. And so it's difficult, you know, if we were living in archaic Greece, you know, what would we think about these poems and these characters coming from that mindset and that society? But I think that I do appreciate more kind of the humanity of Odysseus and the way that his flaws are, you know, kind of able to stand out and, you know, he has regrets. And I think he's just more relatable. Like Achilles is, like you said, he's a demigod. He's, you know, best of the Achaeans. He's, you know, super strong, this untouchable warrior. So, you know, it's interesting and like enjoyable to read about those things. But thinking about like which character I like more at the end of the day, for me, it's the one that I can relate to.
I think there's also what's going on here is that Achilles too is young. He's younger than Odysseus is by the time of the Trojan War. Odysseus just had a child and Achilles is like a boy. So you're sort of comparing a boy with a man. And, you know, Odysseus has flaws. Yes. You know, maybe the being a little bit devious at times and all this stuff. And, you know, it's not his fault that he doesn't go home, but sometimes it is. Like, he boasts to the Cyclops, you know, and does that whole thing, and he gets the gods angry at him sometimes. But it feels like all those flaws are somehow like resolved in the end. Whereas with Achilles, he's like immature, you know, hot-headed, stubborn, you know, all these things that are like just not attractive qualities. And I don't really ever feel like he was redeemed in any way, a little bit in Song of Achilles. So of course it, you know, took a woman to redeem him in the end, but I don't know if I like the whole, even his story arc.
I mean, for Achilles, it was always about his individual glory. It was never about the good of the rest of the army. You know, he knew that by not fighting, he was causing all of these Greek soldiers to die. He was causing the war to be extended, and he just simply wouldn't fight because Agamemnon had insulted his personal honor. I mean, I think it is interesting to think about it from the perspective of age. How would an ancient Greek audience have considered those differences? Would they have really blamed Achilles for not putting his ego aside? Like, was it kind of the idea that, like, you know, boys will be boys, like, you know, this is just how you act when you're at that age? Or was Achilles to an extreme even then? Just always interesting to think about, you know, how these elements have struck different audiences in different ways over the centuries.
And then to turn this to Patrocles a little bit, because you have on either side Penelope and Patrocles. And I think when you frame it like that, the question is a little bit harder, because there is something endearing about Achilles as this really huge figure, very powerful. And yet he has this really close relationship with Patrocles. It feels like it gives Achilles a little bit of a redemption, a tiny bit. And I think that's what the Song of Achilles, the book, exploits a little bit, or a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas then Penelope, of course, is in the original, and their homecoming scene is one of my favorites, when Odysseus goes up to her and she tests him with their marriage bed, right?
Yeah, she knows that it couldn't be moved because one of the bedposts was like a tree that grew up in the middle of their house. And she knew that only Odysseus would know that the bed couldn't be moved because he himself had built it.
And there's something so beautiful about that, because it could have been, the test could have been about anything. It could have also been like a pillar in the house. It didn't have to be the marriage bed, but of course it was the marriage bed. Mm-hmm. And then the moment that he's like, he proves himself, and she already sort of knows, but she just wants to make sure one last time. And maybe it's not, maybe if she knew, I mean, look, you see someone, like, they could look 10 years older and see worn and all that, but you know, if it's your husband. And the fact that she wanted to test him, sometimes I think is more a test of his love. Like, he was gone for so long, he had been with a goddess too, and so it's like, if, you know, it's, yes, you know, he came home, but is his heart elsewhere? And maybe you know, she has a right to ask that. She'll forgive him if his heart is in the right place, but she wants to ask that. And that's like always moves me. But to get back to Patrocles, who has already been eclipsed by Penelope, I mean, it does redeem him a little bit, right?
I think so. I mean, you know, having Patrocles in the poem, and one thing that always strikes me about the character of Patrocles is that in the Iliad, Homer addresses Patrocles like with the second person, like almost breaking out of kind of the author character barrier. And Homer acts as if Patrocles is actually standing before him. So I think Patrocles, like, for Homer, for the Homeric poets, you know, whatever opinion you hold regarding that debate, Patrocles is really an extremely important and unique character within the poem, because he does humanize Achilles and kind of, you know, brings him down from the level kind of divine, untouchable demigod to human, because, you know, every human can relate to the fact of having someone that you care about so deeply and love and have a very strong bond with, and, you know, would do anything for them. So I think to give, right, because there didn't have to be someone like that for Achilles. The gods, you know, don't need a lover. They typically have them, but they, you know.
Multiple.
Multiple, in fact. And so I think Patroclus, you know, when you factor him into all of the decisions that Achilles makes, especially at the end, it does provide a different perspective, I think, and gives kind of a glimpse into the complicated, if you will, emotional turmoil that Achilles was feeling. And, you know, obviously Achilles really only shows his emotional distress over Patroclus at the end of the poem after he's killed. But that implies that, you know, he has these really strong emotions, and it makes you then think back to the beginning of the poem and like, okay, was, you know, he just being stubborn and that's why he refused to fight? Or this whole time, you know, has Achilles been experiencing all these emotions that as the audience we didn't have access to? So I think it's an interesting question.
And you're just making me think maybe like the wrath in the beginning, it's not wrath towards Agamemnon. Maybe really what it is wrath after his, like, someone he loves has passed. Mm-hmm. And that makes me think that maybe, I mean, Patroclus as this really important character and make, like, humanizing Achilles and everything, it's also important that they're both men and they're both at war. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Odysseus, his love story, he's away, he's on his own, he's not at war anymore. Like, he's wandering. And he's like, you know, having these like affairs willingly or unwillingly with other women. Mm-hmm. And it's really about that relationship. And then in the Iliad, it's, you don't really get a lot of women. You get a few here and there, but it's really about the soldiers at war and the relationships they have with each other. And like, you don't really get a lot of them, but I think Achilles and Patroclus serve as like the symbol of that. Like, these are the comrades in arms, whether they're romantically involved or not, almost doesn't matter, because it's just, at least for this, you know, point I'm making, they love each other so much and they're going to war together. And then when one falls, it's like that wrath, that anger, that grief that he feels is so intense. And it's sort of like commemorating that, because in that time, a lot of people went to war and a lot of men went to war and they lost like their dearest friends, you know, and since Trojan War is potentially historical, I think there are differing beliefs on that.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely didn't happen exactly like it does in the Iliad.
Well, we can, us writers can take some artistic liberties, but
I think
more or less
few artistic liberties, but from as far as I can remember of what I've heard in various lectures from various professors, there was some sort of attack on the city of Troy.
Well. And also, and we were talking about this earlier, the Iliad is older. It's generally accepted to be older than the Odyssey. Like, linguistically, yes. I think it's more archaic and potentially story-wise, although it's hard to say when it comes to oral storytelling how far back those things go. But that is interesting, that the fact that people generally accept that it's older. What does that mean about the figure of Achilles and Odysseus in his role in the Iliad specifically?
I was just going to say Odysseus is really interesting in the Iliad because, like, along with a couple other of the kind of advisory characters like Nestor, like, he's the voice of reason, you know, to Achilles being irrational. I think considering that the Iliad is older, you know, you kind of have to approach the Odyssey with that preconception in mind that, like, you know, this is the wise man who went through war, but wasn't necessarily on the front lines fighting all the time as much as he was kind of in the planning role.
And it also makes you wonder, even if the stories I'm sure were already circulating for a long time, like, you know, if there's a story being told about the Trojan War, your next question is, well, how did they get home? You know, and that arises then a bunch, you know, Menelaus, Agamemnon, Odysseus, you get all of them. You have all these wonderful stories that are being told. But it's interesting that the next Homeric epic poem that comes out is Odysseus and not Agamemnon. Like, why wasn't it Agamemnon for all those books? Instead, they focused on him. So maybe the audience or just the culture at the time, Odysseus resonated with them more already. They liked him more. They were interested. And then his story coming home maybe struck a chord a little bit more. Maybe it was more popular.
It's interesting that you bring up Agamemnon, because Agamemnon's story is really important in the Odyssey. And it's told several times by several characters and kind of forms this implicit contrast. Odysseus hears about it as he's coming home. And it's like this source of fear. Like, oh, if this is what happened to Agamemnon, like, what's Penelope doing at home? So it creates this tension. But you're right. It is interesting that, like, you know, clearly both of these stories were important. Agamemnon would become super important later on with tragedy. But the fact that it was Odysseus who the narrative centers around and he's the main character, I think there is something about him that is just more likable. And it's also like, you know, after the Iliad, it's nice to have a happy ending to the story.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. It's like, it couldn't be Agamemnon because that's a horrible. That's a tragedy.
Well, the Iliad ends with the funeral of Hector. You know that they're going to win. But like when you finish reading the poem, it ends on a pretty low note.
It is interesting. I mean, we'll talk about Hector another episode because he's secretly one of my favorites. So I think, Grace, you also like Hector. But for now, we'll stick to Odysseus, Achilles. I think everything we've talked about has put, I mean, our personal bias is clear. I think we both like Odysseus, and I think we have good reasons to. But there is a reason why Achilles is in the Iliad. And the Iliad is older, and it's the Trojan War. It's a huge event. It's not just about one person like the Odyssey. So there is something there, obviously, that resonated with ancient Greeks and also us.
Yeah. I mean, the Iliad, obviously, a beautiful piece of literature. But I think from a modern sensibility, like the Odyssey could be written today and the Iliad could not.
I agree. So Madeline Miller, we're looking out for your Odyssey book. We need one. I would love a man written by a woman if it's Odysseus.
Well, I'm sure there are plenty of people out there who do prefer Achilles. Personally, just my gut instinct is that more women prefer Odysseus. And I think that more men, specifically young men, would prefer Achilles. I don't know. Achilles almost reminds me of like a Marvel movie character, like a superhero.
Yeah.
You know, that's just like the vibe I get.
And the whole heel thing, it resonates, you know, the hero, the demigod.
Yeah. I think it does resonate with a specific audience today.
And I was going to say, it's like Hercules. It's that vibe. Like, I think people nowadays, especially maybe young boys and that whole thing with Hercules, like if you said Achilles, it might bring up the same image almost, just like a strong warrior.
I mean, Hercules also attacked Troy. So
some stories sound a little similar. Some parallels.
A few.
I think we've discussed Achilles versus Odysseus. Who did it better? Stay tuned for our next episode.
It's a good one. Thank you so much for listening. We hope that you enjoyed and found it interesting.
Wale.
Kaede.